We are right there with you in the process of growing our families. And in this episode, we take you through the top three areas of focus each of us are prioritizing as we prep for the big transitions we both have coming up in the next few months. For Dr. Leah, it's planning another embryo transfer to conceive her second child. And for me, Dr. Morgan, it's preparing for the birth and postpartum of my fourth child. Dr. Leah leads you through her personal preconception journey, including what supplements she's taking and dietary or lifestyle steps to optimize her health. And for me, Dr. Morgan, I outline the main focus points for the rest of my pregnancy. And then I take you through the different birth choices that I'm making and how I'm preparing those around me for a supported postpartum. Let's dive in.
Welcome to Healthy as a Mother, the podcast for becoming and being a mother, with your co-hosts, Dr. Leah Gordon and Dr. Morgan McDermott, two naturopathic doctors who get it.
Each week, we teach you how to be the healthiest mother you can be, from fertility and preconception to pregnancy and birth prep, through postpartum and throughout motherhood, empowering you with the natural health guidance and education you're not getting elsewhere so you can confidently navigate the broken system at large.
The real, the raw, the untalked about.
And remember, this information is not intended to diagnose, treat, or manage any disease. Always consult with your doctor before making any changes.
All right, I am so excited to hop in today and talk about the top three things you and I are each doing in preparation for our journeys toward motherhood, mine to becoming pregnant again via IVF, and you to having your fourth baby. And we're going to kind of unpack what we're each doing individually and what that journey is looking like so that people kind of understand what we're doing in our own personal lives, because I think it's really helpful for people to know that and to learn from our journeys. So I guess I can start unless you wanted to hop in and say anything.
No, I just think it'll be cool for people to see what or how we're applying these topics to our own life and our own personal ways, you know, and what's sort of the priorities for us based on our health or our preferences. You know, we talk about a lot of things on this podcast that sometimes does apply to us, sometimes doesn't. And that's always the way that it's going to be for you guys, listeners, as well, is that not everybody has the same path and the same story. And so some things may surprise you or whatever. I don't know. Well, I guess you'll have to see. But this is sort of our recap of where we're at right now, because we're sort of in this critical point where, you know, you're in your preconception period with IVF a couple months out. I am in like the end of my second trimester with birth a couple months out. And so, you know, maybe we'll even do another episode as we're even closer in adding to our families. You know, I mean, this is all the important work that we women do so that we can keep our future generations as healthy as possible. And I mean, there's selfish reasons why we do it too, because it improves our pregnancy experience, you know, so that we feel good during our pregnancies, it improves our birth experiences, and then the way that we feel postpartum, of course, but really for the baby's health and making sure that we are doing our due diligence to create the healthiest babies that we can. So
yeah,
let's dive in. What are the three sort of ways, if you could break it down into chunks of, or categories of like how you are organizing your preconception and what are the things you're focusing on for your own personal, you know, biochemical and environmental exposure, like expression for you, Dr. Leah Gordon, for this second baby? What are you doing?
What am I doing? Okay. So the top three things that I am focusing on really hard right now are detoxing and getting the chemicals out of my body, which I'll hop into more of that in detail, rebalancing my microbiome, so my gut and vaginal microbiome, and then supporting my adrenals, which are the little organs that get really stressed out when you're stressed. And you know, having a baby is a stressful event, and I just want to be as optimal as possible before going into pregnancy. So I can kind of start with breaking down the first one of detoxing.
Wait, and really quick, I just want to say too, because a lot of these things you can't do once you become pregnant. So this is a huge reason why preconception is really important. And this is why we made the weaning episode the way that we did, because we try to talk at the end of that weaning episode about, you know, the gap between children is so important, because once you are pregnant, you know, say you find out that you have something, you know, intestinal going on, you have a microbiome thing, you can't really do all that much once you're pregnant. You have this opportunity though beforehand to optimize your health as best as you can be. And then you're kind of going to be in that body for the next, like, however many long, I mean, usually it's years because you're pregnant and breastfeeding. So just to emphasize that preconception is really super important for you and again for your baby as well. But you could just think about it through the lens of you selfishly wanting to get to the root cause of some of your problems and feeling really good entering motherhood, which we know is a really hard thing to do. And if we enter motherhood feeling sick and run down and worn out, that's not obviously going to be as fun of our experience as entering motherhood feeling really vibrant and well-nourished and well taken care of.
Yeah. And I'm so glad that you brought that up because I think a lot of people think of preconception only for preparation for the first baby. But if anyone is listening to this who wants to grow their family, preconception is any time that is preconception, right? Pre having a conception. And now anyone listening to this who's already had children, you know, there's no judgment. You can do anything that you want to do. But I am of the belief that it is, if you have any issues as a mom, it is nice, or I am choosing to take a break from weaning my child to so that I'm not breastfeeding, so that I can do these things, like you mentioned, that can't really be done with breastfeeding all of the time, and definitely can't be done once you're pregnant. So I chose to wean my daughter, even though I could have kept breastfeeding her. I had plenty of milk. And I had to kind of zoom out. And yes, would it be the most optimal for me to have breastfed my daughter until she was 2 years old? Potentially. And at the same time, I felt like the health of my next baby would have suffered if I didn't address some of the things that I'm addressing now. So I felt that my daughter was good and has had plenty of breast milk. You know, I breastfed her till about 19 months. And now I'm taking the time to optimize my body so that my next baby can have the best shot possible with, you know, surviving, you know, do our embryo transfer, because we're doing IVF. So I want my, you know, body to be as optimal as possible so that the baby survives and then also is healthy while I am pregnant and then postpartum, because yes, a lot of the stuff I'll be talking about, you just can't do once you're in that window. So that brings me to the first big bucket, which is detoxing. And we have a whole episode on detoxing. We have a whole episode on preconception, but I'm just going to share with you a little bit about what I'm doing personally. So I genetically don't detox well. And when I say detox, I mean how well I get things out of my body that I'm exposed to. I have to be very, very careful about the products and things that I bring into my life because I'm the kind of person who, when exposed to scents and fragrance and, you know, plastics and all of that, my toxic load builds up really fast. My sink gets overflown very quickly. I have some genetic issues, some environmental issues that just make it a little bit harder for me to get chemicals out of my body. And when we were in preparation, or when we were preparing for my daughter, I did do some toxicity testing, but at the time, a lot didn't come back on my tests. And I have since learned, I think it's because I wasn't detoxing much at all. So none of it was coming out into my urine to even be tested, which is kind of like an aha thing that a lot of people realize, that when you do a toxicity test, meaning a test that looks at your urine and what's coming out of your body, you have to actually get it out of your body in order for it to show up positive on a test. So I think at the time, way back in the day, my body just wasn't detoxing well. I have since detoxed better and things like that. And I have done a test since weaning my daughter, or at the end of weaning her, where I had some higher levels of toxins, which were surprising to me because I have such a clean lifestyle. And some of them that were elevated were phthalates, unfortunately, were higher in me. And we have incredibly clean products. We don't have any synthetic fragrance, nothing like that in our life. However, we did move into a home that was recently renovated a few years before we moved in. And we have turf in our backyard, which is a form of plastic. And at the time, I was only a few weeks out, or maybe it was just a week or so after traveling. So we were on an airplane. So it's really hard for me to know exactly where the phthalates came from. That's the unfortunate part about doing toxicity testing, is it doesn't tell you exactly where it's coming from. And it's possible I was exposed to a lot of phthalates on the airplane. You know, they have a lot of chemicals that they spray, and a lot of people are wearing scents and perfumes and such. So it's possible that it came from there, because phthalates actually have a quick half-life, meaning when you're exposed, they should get out of your body pretty quickly. So the fact that I had them means that I was being exposed currently. So it's either in my environment, in my home, or in the environment that I was in recently. And we know from studies that phthalates when you're pregnant can impact your baby in utero. So I'm doing everything I can to reduce my exposure and get them out. I also had some higher levels of glyphosate, which is a pesticide, or it's actually an herbicide that is found in Roundup. Now we eat almost primarily organic. Everything that we buy in our home is organic. We do eat out sometimes. However, I suspect that the high amount of glyphosate in my body was because I was eating a lot of Simple Mills products, which I love. However, they have been found to be high in glyphosate because they use almonds and almonds are heavily sprayed. So I have since pulled back.
So disappointing because those are the best crackers ever.
They are. And, you know, basically what I decided to do, and I'll get into kind of my gut health, but there was just a lot of toxins. I also had some residual mold mycotoxins, and my sister's dealt with mold exposure. She had a home that had a lot of mold exposure. We suspect maybe there was mold in our old home that we moved from. And again, if your body doesn't get rid of things very easily, that can stay in your system. And I just didn't want any of that, you know, at high levels or anything when I got pregnant. So I am taking some great steps to support myself in detoxing, which I'll go into a little bit. So basically, with all of that, I decided to really greatly reduce any of the processed food in my life, including the healthy processed food, right? So I'm a big whole food eater. However, postpartum, I was hungry a lot. And so I kind of got into the habit of, you know, having some gluten-free crackers or, you know, gluten-free bread sometimes if I was eating a hamburger and things like that. And I just personally feel so much better if I avoid those or limit them greatly and just really, truly focus on whole foods. So a part of my preconception path to not only help with detoxing, you know, getting some of these pesticides and things out that are maybe in these products, but also to help with my gut health and my microbiome is that I've greatly pulled back on any processed foods, even the quote unquote healthy bars, crackers, cookies, those kind of things.
So good for you. That's hard to do. I just want to commend you because it takes so much time to plan and it's also not impossible. Like I am not somebody who loves to cook. I am not somebody who meal preps. And there's been periods of time in my life, like during preconception periods as well, or like, you know, maybe just I need to really reel it in for my health reasons that I've done the same thing too. And it's all about a learning curve. So when people are listening to this and maybe they're rolling their eyes or they're like, oh my gosh, like eat some crackers, it's fine. It's like, well, you know, actually for some people it's not. And for a couple of people too, just a couple,
just a couple
in the whole world. grains in general, like I think your body from just knowing you for 15 years, you know, it seems to do better without any kind of a grain really, or very few grains. And a lot of people feel better like that. You know, I was listening to something the other day that was just talking about how the different diets are, you can't really explain why some people will feel good on a pure carnivore diet, meaning that they pretty much only eat meat. And then some people though will thrive on a vegan diet. And then there's a lot in between there too. And it's just finding your individual, what works best for you with the intersection, of course, of the knowledge that we have of what is truly healthy or what is not healthy, without, you know, you are being very conscious of this, but just something to note is that sometimes when people cut out whole food groups, they're not being conscious then of the nutrients that they may be missing from not getting those nutrients or from those food groups rather. So this is kind of a problem sometimes with people going gluten-free or like maybe some of those gluten-free foods that they're using and choosing instead that they're highly processed or like made out of rice flour and they're very high glycemic index, meaning they spike your blood sugar. So maybe working with a nutritionist if you're making some really big changes like this or a naturopathic doctor, of course, because we're highly trained in nutrition. But something just to say, I guess, is that it takes a little bit of time to know your body and it's okay to experiment and it's okay to make these changes and go slow with it. And it also becomes a habit. It becomes not such a big deal in time. So like, although it's very easy for you because you've had so many experiences with this, like other people, you guys can get there too. It's okay. Like we're not perfect. Neither of us are totally perfect with it, but you are really, really, really prioritizing this right now because of this imminent transfer.
Yeah, so exactly. Cool. You know, the stakes of an IVF are high, and I just want to do everything that I can to improve that. And it's not that I won't ever have anything. You know, the 4th of July came and someone brought some cassava chips and I had some. It's not like I'm, you know, regimented in the sense that I'm not going to enjoy my life. But I do notice that I feel a lot better when I don't have any of the processed foods. But I'm just not a fan of extremism either. So there's always this balance. But that glyphosate level definitely got my attention. So I was like, okay, we need to pull back on having all of the Simple Mills crackers that I have every day with all my meals. It's like, here's my whole food meal and a side of Simple Mills crackers. So I'm doing that. And then as far as my detox specifically, I have a lot of different things that I'm kind of navigating through. And I know a lot. And I have a lot of protocols in front of me. And sometimes when we don't, when we're kind of acting as our own doctor, it can be kind of overwhelming. So I've called on some of my friends and colleagues to just kind of help guide me on, okay, just kind of tell me what to do for a while. I know all the things to do, but I just want someone to tell me, do this for a while. And so, you know, getting rid of the mold mycotoxins is important. I definitely don't want those in my system. And so one of our friends, Dr. Leslie Black, who we'll have on the podcast in season 3, she kind of gave me a regimen of some supplements and lifestyle things to do to help support that. So some of the supplements I'm taking are milk thistle, which really greatly supports your liver and detox. Her recommendation for aspergillus, which is the type of mold that I had, was resveratrol, as well as phosphatidylcholine in a liquid. A really high potency liquid DHA. So DHA is one of the omega-3s that really helps with brain and just helping get things out of the body. I'm taking liposomal glutathione. I'm also doing my normal needed prenatal because the vitamins and minerals that are in a prenatal help with detox. You need things like folate and B12 and B6, and then all of the minerals are very important for that detox process as well. I am also doing some higher potency omega-3s because in addition to the DHA, just I'll take omega-3s, not every single day, but a few times a week I'll pop some omega-3s because that's just good to prepare my body to have higher omega-3s and prep for pregnancy. And it also is helpful for so many different things. What other supplements am I taking? Oh, magnesium. And I do alternate sometimes with trimethylglycine. So trimethylglycine is a nutrient that really helps to support detox, especially when you have a COMT issue, which is what I have. It's an enzyme that I don't make very well. And it's important in detoxing, especially getting aspergillus species of mycotoxins out of your body, as well as estrogen. So the reason why I have higher estrogen in general, I have bigger boobs and I've had, you know, higher estrogen in the past is because I genetically just don't get rid of things like estrogens or mold or some of these other chemicals because my COMT enzyme is not working very well. Magnesium and trimethylglycine are two things that really support that. In addition to that, we started growing broccoli sprouts. So you can grow your own broccoli sprouts. It's really easy. You just get a kit and these little mason jars. You soak them overnight and then you turn them upside down, rinse them every day. And then all of a sudden you have a mason jar full of sprouts. And broccoli sprouts are really high in sulforaphane, which is also amazing to help detox and get these chemicals out of your body. They support your liver.
And that's like a really cool way to show how you can do a whole food option for – you could take a sulforaphane capsule, of course, but there's a lot of other benefits to the broccoli sprouts like fiber and, you know, having good daily poops. And if you're confused about any of this, if you're like, well, you guys are going too fast, listen to our detoxing before pregnancy episode, which we'll link in the show notes here too, because Dr. Leah explains all of this with these analogies that are really helpful to understand. But pooping is one of the main ways to get things out of the body. And so the fiber and the broccoli – and of course, magnesium also helps with daily pooping. So like, you know, I'm sure that that's one of your goals as well. But I just wanted to say that it's cool to see, you know, you eating a food specifically for a compound in the food instead of just taking a capsule, which you can do. But there's also so many other things that are in broccoli sprouts, many other synergistic compounds. Again, even just the fiber, which is a macro, but still.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, no, it's amazing. And then we aim to eat a brassica family vegetable probably 3 or 4 times a week. So we do a lot of roasted broccoli, a lot of Brussels sprouts. We do cabbage, like we just had coleslaw. We do cauliflower, kale, and all of the brassica family vegetables are also high in sulfur, and they contain DIM and I3C, which are other chemicals that help with liver detox. So I'm using a blend of food and supplements. And then in addition to that, drinking lots of water. Again, you need to poop and pee, getting things out. I have been doing foot baths that are ionic foot baths that pull toxins out of your feet, which are sort of controversial. Some people are like, oh, they don't work or whatever. And I mean, who knows? A bunch of weird foamy stuff comes out of my feet every time I do it. So something I think is happening and it's not harmful, you know, to me. So I've been doing that probably 3 or 4 times a week. And then I have tried to sauna a few times. I'm trying to get established with a place that I like the most. I really do better in infrared saunas because I don't do well with the really high heat. And a traditional sauna that you typically see at gyms and such are usually more of the traditional like Finnish saunas, and they are just high heat, which is still great for sweating to get toxins out of your body. But I personally just don't feel good when I get that hot. So I like the infrared saunas. We used to have one before when I was pre-detoxing before Avia, we had one in the house, but we don't anymore. So I've been kind of popping around different places on ClassPass trying to find a good place that I like. And then doing hot baths. And Dr. Black also recommended this. It's like a moss peat kind of herbal blend that you put in the bath to help you sweat and detox mold in particular. Things like phthalates and BPA come out of sweat really well. So that's exciting to know that, you know, the studies are showing that that happens. And I'm also just being very conscious about what I bring into our home. So just to give you guys an example, I have spent a year saving money and emotionally preparing to buy a non-toxic couch.
Emotionally preparing, I love it.
Emotionally preparing.
Because it's a big deal.
It's a big purchase. It's a purchase that I had to make online that I couldn't sit on. So I've been talking to different people who I found who have one. It's called a Medley couch. And I'll put the information about it in the show notes. But I wanted a big, nice couch for my family. What I've learned over the years from following other non-toxic people and just doing my own research is that it's a lot of times the furniture that we have in our home that can cause issues. And that's another place where phthalates could potentially be coming from. We had a really old couch. And, you know, I've just learned since that as couches break down, if they have more of a toxic foam, it can off-gas more. So again, I'm doing things not in a alarmist way, but in like a, okay, we're ready to purchase a new piece of furniture. I'm going to do it in a more conscious way. Another example is we needed a cupboard to kind of put some of our kids' stuff in because I'm trying to prepare a room for our next baby. And I had ordered one on Pottery Barn, and they do a better job. They have a lot of Green Guard Gold certified furniture, which is basically a certification that shows that it's less toxic. However, when it arrived, I could smell the off-gassing of it. And it just, I intuitively was like, this isn't good, because a lot of furniture is made with particle board, which means it's not solid wood. And that particle board is held together with glue. And the glue can be toxic and have a lot of chemicals that can be harmful when you are trying to conceive. So again, I was like, you know what? I have the option to send this back. And I don't have to, you know, pay a fee to do it. I just felt intuitively my mama bear instincts kicked in. And I was like, I just don't think I should be breathing this in the whole time while I prepare for pregnancy and I'm pregnant because it's a brand new piece of furniture. So I sent it back and I instead found a local handcrafted company that makes solid wood cabinets. And I decided to purchase that instead because solid wood is typically less toxic and they use low VOC paint. So
and then you're
stain.
Supporting, you know, a local,
yeah, a company, local person.
Which is cool. I mean, there's like benefits about all of this, you know?
Yeah. And then we have a turf in our backyard. When things get hot, it leaches chemicals like phthalates and things like that. So I am more conscious now of walking on our turf wearing shoes or socks or being on a blanket as opposed to just being barefoot on our turf. So these are some of the steps that I'm taking. I'm reducing my exposure and I'm also helping prepare my body to get rid of stuff. The next step that I'm taking, that next big tip, is improving my microbiome. So your microbiome are the gut bacteria in your body. And going through IVF and then having a C-section, I had to take a lot of antibiotics, unfortunately, which wasn't what I wanted to do, but it was what I had to do. And that unfortunately really disrupted my microbiome, and it shifted my gut to have more yeast overgrowth. In particular, there was an antibiotic I had to take with IVF called doxycycline. And as soon as I started taking it, I started getting white film on my tongue, which is a sign of yeast overgrowth. What that means is I probably already had some yeast present, and that just allowed it to overgrow. However, I wasn't able to do much about it because I went right into pregnancy after taking that doxycycline, because it was right before my embryo transfer. I went right into my pregnancy. My pregnancy resulted in a C-section with tons of IV antibiotics. And then I was starving postpartum, breastfeeding. So I was just eating everything I could find, bags of donuts and all sorts of things. I was absolutely ravished. And so I didn't care. I was just eating carbs and on carbs on carbs. And it's okay at that time because I needed to have the calories to feed my daughter. And because of that, my microbiome definitely took more of a hit, right? Because sugar and carbs can feed that yeast and just some of the bad bacteria that kind of overgrew because of the antibiotic use. So now that I am done breastfeeding, I can kind of approach my microbiome. And what I'm doing, because I'm detoxing, it kind of coincides, but I am taking some herbs occasionally to help reduce the bacteria, in particular a supplement called Biocidin, which is really gentle but effective at kind of helping reduce bad bacteria. And my plan is after the month of July, I'm going to be hitting detox pretty hard this month. In August, I'm going to be doing some more targeted microbiome support, taking herbs to kill any potential parasites, also yeast and some bad bacteria, and then just flood my system with fermented food and lots of probiotics to kind of replenish. And then I'm also working on resetting my vaginal microbiome. And I actually have a course on this if anyone is interested to know more in specifics, like what I'm doing, called the Lady Part Repair Protocol. So I'll link that in the show notes. I won't go into the details on that, but sort of same thing of, you know, reducing bad bacteria and bringing in the good guys. So that's my second kind of thing I'm doing for preconception. And the third is supporting my adrenal health. And I don't identify with being like a super stressed out person, but I think other people around me would probably say that I am. I don't know. Would you consider me stressed?
Yeah.
You can be honest.
I would say that you handle it well, but you have a lot of just thoughts.
I do have a lot of thoughts. Yep. That's a very kind way to say it.
I feel like your stress is very mental, emotional. It's not from you sleep really great.
Yes.
You prioritize sleep. You eat great.
Mm-hmm.
You have a good balance with your social life and being out in nature and all of those kinds of things that cause a certain level and type of stress on the body. But your stress comes from like planning, ruminating,
mm-hmm.
You know, it's business related and it's motherhood. It's a mental, emotional crossroads that you're always at trying to figure out what's the best path to take. So I think you do have some stress that way. But when I look at you compared to like the general public who's not sleeping, not eating, et cetera, I would say, no, you are not stressed in comparison to them in that kind of a way. Even if they, in their experience of their brain, don't really feel all that stress, their body's still feeling it.
Yes.
And at some point it's going to tell them that this is not okay anymore.
Yes. So I don't have a lot of the physical stress, but stress comes from so many different places, which I talk about in my fertility formula program that is launching soon, which is a big part of my stress.
Yeah.
Exactly. So just like getting that prepped, but no, I'm very excited for it to be in the world. But yes, my stress mostly almost entirely comes from business. It's sort of my life lesson. You know, we all have our lessons. Some people it's relationships, some people it's motherhood, some people it's business, some people it's interpersonal relationships or whatever. But my lessons of how my soul grows and I, you know, push myself into things is a lot of it is business. And just because of that, I am attempting to set up my business so that I can really pull back on what I need to do during my pregnancy. And so that looks like, for me, healing my adrenals, I do sleep amazing. I'm aiming for 9 hours every night. And I'm able to get it because my daughter's amazing. And it's a beautiful gift that she's giving me. So we go to bed and we sleep in so that I get 9 hours of sleep, which is really helpful for your adrenals. I eat very well, you know, keeping my blood sugar balance is key. And then I'm taking adrenal adaptogens. Rhodiola in particular is a really beautiful herb for the stressed out person. And I also take Needed's stress support, which has a blend of rhodiola and ashwagandha and shisandra. And I really love it. I'm biased because I helped design it, but I think it's just great. So that's kind of what I'm doing for my adrenal health. And then a lot of my adrenal prep is preparing my life, my business, because I know once I'm pregnant, if it goes like my last pregnancy, I will be tired and I won't want to do anything.
And it's not just tired. It's not fatigue. It's like I experienced the same thing that you did where it's like all motivation to do anything. Yes. Drops gone. Off the face of the planet. It's gone. And it's not like, oh, it's accessible. I just have to try really hard. It's like not even accessible.
Yeah, it's
anymore.
Not there. And it just, you don't care, you know? And
this you don't is, even care that it's
this
not there.
I had this thought in the shower this other day and I was like, you know what? Women who choose to have families really do have a different experience in the work field, right? I mean, that sounds obvious. But I'm sure there are some women who don't, you know, and they maybe are the main breadwinner and their husband stays home and takes care of the kids and things like that. But in general, the way I've chosen to be a mother and a business owner, things move slower and things are different because I want to be with my child and I want to be with my baby. I also want to be a doctor and have my business. And so there's just a lot more thought and preparation that kind of has to go into how that's going to work, because in a traditional world of business, you can't just take like 9 month, you know, hiatuses from your business and think it's just going to like keep going. You know, if you want to personally step away, you need to put things in place so that it can keep going. Otherwise, everything you've been working towards sort of just crumbles to the ground. And I was in a really beautiful transition with my last daughter because I had a full practice. I was like slammed with one-on-one patients. And right around the time when we were doing IVF, I was very stressed at that time, very overwhelmed. And I just came to a breaking point where I was like, I have to pull back significantly. And so I brought in a new doctor. I transferred a lot of my patients to them and I pulled back significantly on one-on-one care. And then about my second trimester, I felt more motivated to see patients again and start working on my business. I've been in like a super creative, motivated space right now, creating womanhood wellness and all my programs and the fertility formula and everything I've been working on. And I'm trying to take advantage of that because I know that once I'm pregnant, that motivation is probably going to go down. So I'm doing everything I can to get that all prepped and ready. And then I plan to hire an online business manager, hopefully, who can help take over my practice and allow me to kind of pull back. So I'm being very conscious of knowing that I am in a season right now of pushing, but not to push too hard that it stresses me out. And so that I can have this preparation and prepare my body to have less stress while I'm pregnant. So there's a lot of things I'm navigating.
And this is like such an analogy. I just saw it all flash before my eyes. This is the prepping that you're doing now is analogous to, okay, so this is just the business prepping. Mm-hmm. You are prepping yourself to be in a position where you can take time off or where you can lean into the feelings that you're going to have being in this completely different energetic and brainwave state, which like we know that we go into a different brainwave state during birth, but I believe that it lasts for a long time. People will call it the portal, like the birth portal or like the postpartum kind of bubble or whatever. And you know, some people like to talk about it in terms of it's like an oxytocin high or it's like a whatever, but you're literally between worlds for a very long time. And it's such a gift to be able to be in that space and to stay in that space too. So we do a lot of prep so that we can have postpartums like that, or we should be doing that, right? But like, that's one of the things that we're trying to push is like, hey, we need to be talking with our friends and family, cooking freezer meals for weeks and weeks and weeks of food so that you don't have to cook a dang thing for like the first 2 months of your baby's life, ideally, or whatever it is. And it is a lot of this prep at one point in time so that you don't have to do a dang thing at another point in time. And it reminded me of the book, The Red Tent. Have you read that?
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Okay. So remember in that book, and we'll link it as well because it's a great one if you are interested and if you've never heard of it. It's basically about how every month the women in this village, this like little community, will prep for the new moon. They all bleed on the new moon and they prep for days and days in advance of that bleed so that there's enough food and wine. And I mean, I just remember them talking about wine all the time in the book. So wine and water and whatever it is that the women's role in the village is, they do it all beforehand so that when it's time for their cycle, they all go into the red tent together and they just mm-hmm. bleed and they laugh and they talk and they have community and they hang out and like the rest of the town is sort of taken care of because they've done all this prep so that they can just rest. And then they're mm-hmm. not trying to push themselves through this very physiologically demanding process, which is exactly what's happening all the time now. And we've just normalized it so much. We've normalized like, and I know that there's going to be some people here listening to this that are just rolling their eyes. And I used to be like that too. And I really encourage you, if you're having a reaction like that, to think about it. And I'm not judging you because again, like I've said, I've been there. I'm not judging you. And we need to really think about this. Like think about the family culture you came in that revolved around work. Was it pull yourself up by the bootstraps and never rest? Did you have any culture whatsoever around in your childhood that you learned about rest and the importance of that? Did you ever learn about honoring our body cycles? And now specifically being a woman in a country like America, a capitalist society that also we have the worst maternity leave or maternal health rates in general mm-hmm. of some of the industrialized countries. And it's like, we're just supposed to act like nothing's happening. It's completely fine. Move on with your life. And I do feel like there's a big shift happening, though. There's a revolution where people are like planning out their schedules and their workload around their cycle. Mm-hmm. They're like, I know I'm going to be ovulating during this time. I'm going to schedule these meetings here, or I'm going to do this there, or I'm going to take a couple of days off when I'm cycling.
Right.
And I think it comes off as maybe it's like, oh, it's such a luxury. Like you're so privileged. It's such a bougie thing to do. And I mean, yes, of course there has to be a part of that. Otherwise it's not possible because, you know, the work and the bills never stop, but it shouldn't be like that. Right.
Right.
That should not be the way that it is. It should be a right that everybody is given. And because it's part of the culture, mm-hmm. it's not part of our culture. No, it is part of our culture. Here's an example. If somebody has spine surgery, mm-hmm. no one is expecting them to do anything for a very mm-hmm. long time. Imagine though, if there was some other culture in that part, in another part of the world where it didn't matter if you had surgery, you were expected to be getting up and doing something like the next day and da da da, and how wacky and wonky that would look. And we would look at that situation and just be like, what is happening there? That's mm-hmm. so unreasonable and illogical. And I think that you could say the same thing about mm-hmm. how women intersect as mothers in the workforce. And it's so difficult. And it's, I mean, I've never even done it. Still to this day, I have never worked a 9-to-5 job. And this is a privilege that I have, and I will totally own that. Worked a 9-to-5 job as a mother. And I know some people want that. Like they're like, I need that break, and they really, really want it. Or they have a strong desire for their workforce, or they have to because of finances, which it's very difficult to live in a one income household nowadays. Mm-hmm. So this used to be something that was much more feasible. Now it's much more difficult. There's a lot of sacrifices you have to make. I mean, we did make a lot of sacrifices for this to work as well, but my husband had a good job. And, you know, we moved to a state that was much cheaper so that we didn't have this financial state, you know, kind of pressure so that I could stay home with the kids. But still, it's like, I can't even imagine. And I'm like, well, how do we balance? How do we do it all?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
You know, and then it's like, I have this desire to homeschool too. And it's like, well, how do you homeschool and work? And because I do also like my work, I am less into it, I think, as than you are. And mm-hmm. you've always been, the business stuff and business side of things has always been such a passion for you. And it's always come really easily to you too, which I really honor that in you, because it's like, you're just natural at it. You're very good at it. And I don't know. I'm just kind of going off on this tangent, but I feel like it's so frustrating how these kind of preparation moments are not honored or not talked about, or they seem like, I don't know, maybe this is just me, but it feels like there's a bias against it where it's sort of like unnecessary, or people like roll their eyes. They're like, oh, whatever. Like, but you know what? It's like, we have to, if we want to set up an experience that we want to have, like you want to have a pregnancy where in case you feel badly, like you did, you don't have to worry about it and things are plug and play, and then you can spend more time with your children, you know? Mm-hmm. And I don't know. It's just,
prior, it's kind of wild. My husband used to work in the Navy, and they used to say prior prep prevents piss poor performance. And what you're saying is exactly correct. And our cycles actually with our hormones are designed on purpose for us to have periods of push and then periods of rest. You know, the estrogen that increases during the follicular phase leading up to ovulation sets us up so that we are motivated, we're energetic, we want to go do stuff. Our testosterone is boosting at that time, so our motivation increases substantially, you know, evolutionarily probably, so that we could prep, we could gather food, we could do all of these things, because once we could be quote unquote pregnant after ovulation is when progesterone hops up and makes us want to slow down and rest and kind of like do that all the way until our period when we really need to be resting. And that a lot of times when women don't honor that cycle, then they do end up things with PMS, you know, which is premenstrual syndrome, but some people say it stands for please move slower. In the sense of, you know, we just can't push it the whole time. And I think the same birth and preparing for pregnancy is just like a ginormous thing of a, it's a macro of a micro scale of your cycle. And, you know, for me, people might look at me again and say, oh, well, you are so privileged that you have this company that you can kind of do whatever with. But I have been preparing for this since I was 15 years old. You know, I have known.
Yeah, it's not for lack of work.
Yeah, I have known that I wanted to be a doctor, a business owner, and a mother since I was a teenager. And so I have taken, you know, 2 decades of preparation for these moments. So it's, you know, not everybody has the ability to you know, prep to pull off. And it sucks that our country doesn't provide more support for mothers, you know, in that time. But if you do have that ability, or if it's something, even subtle things that you can start to pay attention to start preparing for these things, I think women get caught off guard when they haven't prepared and when things aren't set in place. And that's when a lot of the struggle happens. And when you try to do it all, something has to give, you know, something has to give. So for me, I'm not going to let my health give or my children give. Like for me, I just have like an okay business. It could be way better. I could have like a humongous business, but I choose not to so that I can have more time with my children. And, you know, I also have help, you know, because I work, I can pay for Heidi to help me. And these are just decisions, you know, that we've made to try to create the life that we want. And it looks different for every person, but those are some of the things that I'm doing to prepare for my pregnancy. And I'm excited to see how it goes, but let's talk about you. What are you doing and prep for your birth? Because this is, getting pregnant is one transition that I'm preparing for. I'm preparing for the transition of becoming pregnant. You are now preparing for the transition of birthing a baby. So tell me about that transition for you.
Yeah. Okay. So I'm 24 weeks pregnant, almost 25 weeks pregnant now. And so, you know, the third trimester starts at 28 weeks pregnant. So I'm getting closer to the third trimester, which sounds crazy, but I do feel like in the last maybe week or 10 days that like my sensations of the baby, like, and the way that my, even the way I'm walking, I'm kind of like, oh, wow. Yeah, no, this is like, I'm pregnant.
Oh my God, I'm pregnant.
Oh my God, I just realized. And I knew that I was, but I'm starting to like, you know, when I lay down in bed at night, I don't want to get back up, you know, that kind of thing. If I have to get back up for some reason, I'm starting to be like, whoa, yeah, there is a presence in this body where up until this point, although, you know, with feeling sick, nauseous, whatever, it wasn't like that physically. So anyway, that's kind of where I'm at right now. And I just keep having these moments. The reason I bring it up is because it's fresh on my mind almost at like any moment. I'm kind of being like, wow, why am I having, it's like I haven't integrated. Like I was even saying to my husband last night on the couch, we're going to have another baby. And he was like, yeah. He looked at me like, no shit. And I was like, but think about that. I was like, I remember being this pregnant with my third, with Sloan, and when we didn't know who she was yet, you know, we didn't know even if she was boy or girl at that point because we didn't find out the sex with her. And just thinking about how like fast forward 2 years from now, there will be another little girl in my house, like toddling around, Avi's age, you know, 18 months old. With like hair and eyes and personality and, you know, wants and likes and dislikes and all of these things. And I just am like, it's almost so surreal to think about because I know what joy and amazingness that is. It's like I'm looking at like a theme park that I can't wait to go on the rides on, but it's just like hasn't opened yet. It's being built. And I'm like, oh my gosh, we get to do that. But then of course there's like, you know, a little bit of worries and some fears I have too, because postpartum is hard for me. So what I'm doing in terms of pregnancy right now and kind of preparing for the birth and the postpartum, and if I were to break it down into 3 things, I would say there's like an element of me that's focusing on my pregnancy, of course, right now. And then there's my element of working on my birth and then an element of working on preparing for the postpartum, which has only really just come into my like lens and my sphere in the last couple of weeks. So in my pregnancy, the number one thing I'm doing is I'm working on getting a lot of protein. And if you've been following my Instagram account, you'll see that I talk about this a lot. And I've been trying to post because people are saying it's very helpful to see. And I agree. I think I kind of consider myself my own target market. So I really just post things that I like about other people's accounts where I'm like, that's helpful. Like that was really cool to see. And so I've been doing these Reels series called like What I Eat in the Day at certain weeks pregnant. And so I'll link those in the show notes here too. But working on protein has been so much easier to me than just the idea or the tenet of like eat a lot or eat well. And so for me, that little paradigm shift of thinking about it in terms of protein has made a huge difference. So things I'm eating a lot of, and I know not a lot of people can eat these things, but I eat a lot of eggs. I eat a lot of dairy, like a ton of dairy. I can't even, every day I probably eat 4 to 5 servings of dairy. I eat lots of Greek yogurt, cottage cheese. You know, a quarter cup of cottage cheese has like 14 grams of protein in it. It's insane. There's so much.
I'm so envious of you being able to eat dairy.
I'm sorry.
It's okay. It just seems so fun to eat.
You know, and a lot of people, you know, they maybe have a problem with it just theoretically, but they don't know. I encourage you to try it because maybe it's okay, or maybe raw dairy. So I drink a lot of raw milk. Sometimes I make raw kefir now. I haven't been making it as often lately because we've been traveling so much. And like with any other fermented food that you're making yourself as like a sourdough starter or kefir grains, you know, you have to keep them alive. And because we've been gone so much, but now we're going to be in town for a little while, except next week when you come into town. But anyway, and then the week after that, when I'm out of town again, I need to start making it again. So I drink a lot of raw milk. That is a controversial topic. I totally understand. I get people backlashing up on me on Instagram all the time. And I just encourage you to look into the risk profile of that because I am not concerned. I am truly not concerned. There is a huge amount of probiotic activity in raw milk before it's pasteurized and everything's killed. And a lot of those good bacteria cancel out any of the bad bacteria. Listeria and those different things are, because these raw milk companies are up against such scrutiny at constant times, their testing is really adequate and really good. I've also been to this farm that I'm buying the raw milk from, and I just feel super comfortable with it. I love it. The cows are grass fed. They're happy. They're like, it's a beautiful, picturesque Waldorf book scene, you know, of cows eating grass and being milked by, you know, these farmers' hands. It's beautiful. So that's something that I choose to do. I also eat a lot of raw egg yolks, which people also have a big problem with. And I wouldn't do it with conventional raised chicken eggs. I wouldn't. Like if I went to the grocery store and I bought a just carton of eggs, I would not eat those raw. I'm actually becoming like such an egg snob now because we have our own chickens, and you don't have to have your own chickens. You can find a local person who does have backyard chickens or farmer, which back to supporting local, I think everything is going to, we're in a big revolution right now where people are starting to realize like what's important and how to keep the world from falling apart. Mm-hmm. Some pieces of that include not using AI, which I refuse to do. I will not. But also, you know, not always supporting big ag and like finding your local farmers or who is the closest to you. Because I know that there are parts of the country that are sort of really, really far away from any farms. Now in Idaho, there's farms around every single corner. So it's very easy to get local, you know, pastured chicken and the grass-fed beef. Like it's really easy. It's really highly available to us. So I know that not all places are like that. But anyway, I just feel really good on dairy as well, which a lot of people don't, but I do. And so, and then meat. I mean, I eat a ton of meat. So I eat way more chicken now than I used to. But because my iron levels are so low, if you've been following me, I've been kind of sharing my ferritin story. So ferritin is a long-term iron storage molecule. And I knew my ferritin was low in October. So basically, let's see. So yeah, we're coming up to like a year. I knew it was low, but I wasn't in preconception period because this baby kind of snuck in. We weren't sure if we were going to do the fourth baby thing. And I was also dealing with some long COVID symptoms at that point. My expression of COVID during the acute phase was really not bad at all. But then I had these low grade daily fevers for like 5 weeks and it sucked. It was so obnoxious and it felt like nothing I did was improving it. But then I also lost all motivation because I felt really terrible every day. And so I did this huge cleanse. It was like a combination parasite and detox cleanse, which I had not actually done something like that in my life. And I have never felt better in my whole entire life. my immune system also, this is just a personal side note, but my immune system in my body is kind of my like weaker system. Whereas maybe for you, it's like digestion, I would say probably.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
So for me, it's more immune system. It's like I would just get sick around every corner. Anytime the kids would get sick, I would get sick. And I went through the entire winter, November, December, January, February, never becoming sick, not one single time. And the kids were sick constantly, you know, off and on, or one of them was sick or something, or somebody was snotty at one point. And normally my normal baseline me would have been sick. And I just didn't. It's like it really reset my health in a different kind of a way. And I think that's also probably why I ended up getting pregnant the way I did, because it was like I was so healthy and so vibrant. And yeah, this baby saw an opportunity and really came in, and I'm glad that she did. But I was just so surprised by that whole thing. So I didn't fix my ferritin. Long story short, I didn't fix it because I wasn't in the preconception period. And now, okay, so back to our preconception points from earlier. Now here I am, I'm pregnant, and it's a hell of a lot harder to increase your ferritin when you're already pregnant. So you should be doing these things before you're pregnant. Learn from me. Don't do what I'm doing. So now I'm having to take a lot of supplemental iron, which I did try for a period of 6 weeks. I was like, I'm only going to take beef liver and really bioavailable copper sources as well to help make some of the other, you know, the ceruloplasma plasmin, I can't even say that word.
Yeah.
That is part of the, you know, the iron recycling system. And I was going to go that route completely. And it did not affect my ferritin enough for me to feel like that was a good route. So now I'm taking supplemental iron, which is fine. Sometimes you have to do. There's a lot of people on the health community right now that are like, don't ever take supplemental iron. And it's like, you know what? Okay. I just don't think you're seeing the whole picture. Sometimes people need to do this, and especially pregnant women, because I want to have good iron stores. I also found a fascinating article that I can now no longer find, which I've searched and scoured the internet, but I read it. I swear it was real at one point, that was connecting hypoferritinemia, which means low ferritin, which is what I would consider myself having right now, with mastitis. And I was like, oh my gosh, have I maybe been, because I don't remember. I know that I had my labs checked in my other pregnancies, but I don't know. I couldn't remember ferritin numbers. I can't remember if I was even as like interested in all the optimization stuff as I am now then. But I wonder, especially after my first, because I had it recurrently, a recurrent mastitis. Mm-hmm. I wonder if my ferritin, if I was just tanked out, you know?
Interesting.
I know, it's super interesting. Okay. And so the other thing that's interesting to note is that I am not, frankly, anemic in my hemoglobin and hematocrit. They look great.
Yeah.
And this is why it doesn't give you the full complete picture, because my ferritin currently is like 9. Ugh, so it's bad.
It's really bad. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. We want to see ferritin at like 50, like 40, 50, something like that. You know, and in pregnancy, for it to be in the 30s is like, okay, fine. Or even the like 20s, it's not great, but it wouldn't be that uncommon. 9 is severe though. So I'm really working on protein and so the beef, and then eating my beef with bioavailable vitamin C sources as well, because vitamin C really helps iron absorption. So I am eating my beef with things like red peppers, or, you know, bell peppers, or even just a glass of orange juice because I love it. It's so good. I'm also being more cognizant, because I wasn't cognizant about this for a little while, because I'm eating so much dairy. Dairy prevents iron absorption in a full way, and because of the calcium. So you have to be kind of mindful of some of these things. So what I do is I take my iron at night, usually right before bed.
That's when I always recommend people take it, which is why Needed. So if any of you are listening and you take Needed's prenatal, I just want to plug this. Yes. Needed's prenatal does not have iron in it. Some people love that because they don't want to take the iron. But if you need iron, you need to take extra iron. Needed has an iron, or you can find other brands. I recommend iron bisglycinate is the form, but you need to take it separate because it is not in your prenatal, just in case any of you are taking Needed's
confused about
prenatal.
That. Yes. And a lot of people enjoy that about Needed's prenatal because they don't have low iron and they don't actually need it or want it. Mm-hmm. That's why the company did that. And it's cool that they did that.
But and we did it because it doesn't absorb well, you know, with the other nutrients. So it's sort of like a waste, you know, to take
something
it all
to
together.
Take separately.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. Okay. So that's what I would say I'm doing. And then in terms of exercise, I have always just been a walker. I was a yoga instructor here and there. I did some yoga here and there, but I also totally ruined it for myself, which is like a story for another day. But I love to walk. So, and now I have a dog, which I'm obsessed with, and he's obsessed with me. It's great. It's a mutual relationship. And we have a lot of easy to walk kind of like fields around us as well. So I am prioritizing walking. I would say I don't do it every day, but I will, no matter what, do it every day past 32 weeks. It's just like this kind of thing that I have in my head. I don't know. I've always done that with all my pregnancies though. I will also seek out hills whenever I have the chance. Hill walking or stair walking, I guess you could do it up and down in your stairs in your house or in some kind of a building, really, really helps bring so much blood flow to the entire pelvic bowl, the low back, the butt, the quads. And if you're having any kind of like, now, if you have a pubic symphysis disorder, which is where the pubic bones, that area where the two bones of the pelvis meet, if that's maybe feeling unstable, this might not be for you. But if you're having that like deeper lower back and kind of side achy where your psoas runs along, which is the expression I more get towards the end, the only thing – yes, I go to the chiropractor. I'll get the massages, whatever. But the only thing that consistently helps me is walking up and down hills or stairs because of the blood flow and then the – kind of the stretching, the pulling and contraction and release of that action. It's just also the best pregnancy exercise that you can do.
Yeah.
You know, I do my 40 squats when I brush my teeth at night. Mm-hmm. That's my other exercise thing that I do.
I love it.
But that's kind of where I'm at with my pregnancy. I'm really prioritizing food, protein. Oh, and I'm still on the track to try to gain 65 pounds is my goal, but right now I'm kind of hovering and I haven't gained much past like 33 pounds. I'm also way less hungry. Now I'm in that phase where I really am being like forceful of myself to eat food because I could just go hours and hours without. Where in the beginning, in the first trimester, your insulin spikes a lot and you're building this baby so quickly and blood sugar just tends to tank out really quickly. And so I was ravenous that whole first trimester and then a little bit into the second. But now I find myself in that stable point where I kind of can fall back into my old patterns, which is maybe I get busy and then I don't eat and I'm like, oh crap. And so I really am trying to focus on that. Okay. And then with my birth prep, I am not doing a whole lot. I mean, this will be my fourth birth, so I do know what to do, but I have different birth preferences this time that I wanted to share because some of these things just didn't really seem that important to me in the past. And now I feel like they are important. So let me pull up my little notepad here, but I've been thinking a lot about this. What do I want? This is definitely our last baby. And I know I said that last time, but I know for sure this is our last baby. So I am trying to be so, so, so present to the entire thing. And now at this point with the baby kicking and moving and I can feel her so much that I just love being pregnant from this whole point onwards. I never really get like too big and too uncomfortable. But again, I want to remind people I'm almost 6 feet tall and I have a very long torso. So I don't get all that uncomfortable. Yeah. I think that's also why I can make big babies and it's fine. I want this baby to be 10 pounds. That I'm trying to manifest. I gained 60 pounds. The baby's 10 pounds. All my kids are there for the birth. So that would be my goal. One of my goals is I really want all the kids to be there. I think that I truly believe they're at the maturity levels now. Even she'll be three right before the baby's born. I think that she can handle it. Mm-hmm. Where in the past with some of my other past births, I didn't think that my kids could handle it. But I do think this time around, it would be beautiful and wonderful. Mm-hmm. But in addition to that, I really want this birth to be super hands-off. And my midwife is very hands-off, but I've even asked her to be further hands-off. Cool. If she feels comfortable with it, to act as if she's truly not even there. Mm-hmm. Which, you know, sometimes people are like, why? And I guess it's to me, I don't need or want. And if I do, I'll ask for it in the moment. If I'm like, I need you guys to be like helping me. This is really hard. I need encouragement. I need touch. I need whatever. I'll ask for it in the moment. And I encourage all of you to do the same thing. But the way that my last two births have gone, I didn't really want or need much support at all. I just was in my own focused state. And that's where I had the best time was like really not getting pulled into any other sensory experience that was happening in the room. Mm-hmm. And being completely in my own kind of head and focus space. Yeah. So I want no cervical checks, which she's down to do, you know, unless we need them. I asked for a cervical check with Sloan's birth. And then with Savi's birth, it just kind of happened. It didn't feel violating to me. I knew it was sort of part of the like protocol. The first cervical check for Savi's birth was like, I was kind of curious. I was like, mm-hmm. where am I at? And I was shocked when she said, you're like a stretchy 8. I was like, oh my gosh, this is happening so fast. and it was with the second cervical check at Savi's birth. That was kind of stupid because literally her head was like coming out of me. But the student midwife, bless her soul, they have to learn at some point. So whatever. Again, I didn't feel like it was violating. Some people do with cervical checks. And then with Sloan's birth with the same midwife that we'll have for this fourth birth, I did ask because I was curious. Now, this time around, I want to – who knows? Maybe I'll change my mind. I don't know. I'm not beholden to these ideas. But I want to just go with the flow of everything and be very hands-off and no cervical checks. I also want to catch the baby myself. Now, Wes has always assisted with that, and that's been really beautiful. But I have this sort of vision, if everything goes the way that I'm thinking – where I'm on my kind of hands and knees in the tub in the middle of our living room and all the kids are around and I pull the baby up myself completely by myself. Now, if I'm in some kind of a funky position, I'm standing up or, you know, I'm on hands and knees on land, I may need help and that's totally fine. I'm not beholden to this. This is sort of just a dream or like maybe if it goes in a way where it can just be me, I would like that for myself with this, you know, one last baby. I also want to keep baby attached to the placenta while it's birthed and not cut it. Even though we've done delayed cord clamping all the time for probably like 20 minutes at least, because my placenta's usually always come out around like 20 to 30 minutes postpartum. I want to birth placenta and keep baby and placenta attached for hours. So I'm not really interested in a full lotus birth. Lotus birth means where you leave the baby attached to the placenta for as long as it takes for the cord to naturally dry and break away from the umbilicus on its own. And you kind of put the placenta in a little basket and you cake it with herbs so that it's keeping it kind of fresh smelling, but also like keeping it, they're antimicrobial herbs or things like thyme and sage. And I think that's great. I know myself realistically, I'm not really interested in that, but I want to keep the baby attached to the placenta for just as long as until I feel like let's cut it off, you know, let's cut it off now. So I guess I just want things a little bit more as if almost to emulate more of a free birth where it's sort of on my terms even more. And I feel like I truly feel so supported by my midwife experiences, really, really lucky in that. But I think I'm just kind of craving a fully mother-led, me-led, and also just these little things, again, that they didn't seem important to me beforehand. I never had wishes that weren't met. It's not like that happened. It's just that this time I'm like, you know, actually, yeah, let's make that happen. Let's not cut the cord until the placenta's been out for a couple of hours. Or yeah, let me try to just only grab the baby if I can. And and I think I pretty much did grab Savi. Because I remember trying to pull her out and she was stuck at her umbilicus for like a hot second. But anyway, I don't know. I'm just imagining being in the tub in our living room. So we used the bathtub in our bathroom with Sloan's birth and that was fine, but it was a little small. And so given that I want the kids in the bathroom with us too, it's just not enough room. So I'm going to borrow the tub from my midwife, which is nice. A lot of midwives always – or not always, but a lot of them will have them that you can rent from them or that they'll just even reserve for you for free that you may not even need to pay anything. So that's kind of like what I'm thinking about now for birth. And then I've begun the process of another thing that I always do is listen to lots of birth stories. So I've begun that process now where I'm consciously, intentionally, like when I'm driving or when I'm on the walks, I'm listening to birth stories. So instead of catching up on my Marco Polos, which I love so much, or calling you.
Yes, which I'm never answering because I'm so bad.
It's okay. You've been answering a lot lately. Good job, I have to say.
Thank you. I took my phone off. Do not disturb during the day.
Perfect. Thanks. Well, otherwise, I'm just sitting here calling you back to back.
I know. I love it though. It makes me so happy every time I see that I've missed a call from you. It brings me joy. My question for you is when you're listening to birth stories, do you only listen to the positive birth stories or do you listen to all of them? Hospital births, like all of the things? Because I know during my pregnancy, I was like, oh, do I want to bring these like traumatic stories into my space or is that good to do? Like, what would you say? What would you recommend for people?
So I think you have to really know yourself. Are you an information person or are you I get really anxious and I ruminate on the bad person? Because I've ran into both people. I'm an information person. So when I was preparing for my first birth, I listened to every story possible and I really learned from the negative ones, like, or the ones where the woman had a negative experience or where something traumatic happened, because I was still learning about birth.
Yeah.
And I was still learning I was still making and formulating in my mind the patterns. And, oh, you know, I've noticed that, like, these women who maybe do X, Y, and Z, this kind of thing typically seems to happen. Like, that's really interesting. And then I noticed that over and over and over again. So for me, all of those little types of things really packed my subconscious with, like, a lot of good information that I wanted to know so that I wasn't surprised and that I felt like I really knew, okay, there's a lot of different ways that this can go. And then I also preferentially, yes, I did try to focus on the positive ones so that I wasn't afraid of birth. Although, right, I would say, honest to God, I was never actually afraid of birth. Truly, deeply down in my soul, my fear with my first birth specifically was, I know I have to get my own freaking head out of the way. Because if I am in my own way, I will fuck it all up. And I'll be so mad at myself if I'm anxious and I'm pulled out and I'm like, blah, 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 because I'm, you know, you and I are both very cognitive people. And that's my tendency, is the mental emotional stress as well, just like you. And so I knew if I at all, like, my preparation was completely solely focused. And that's why I did hypnobirthing, around dropping my mental emotional monkey mind stuff and dropping into my body and fully trusting. So, because I knew if I just got, like, wigged out by something that was happening and that it would pull my hormonal loops out of whack and maybe stall the labor, and then I would get exhausted, which almost happened. I got really, really close to being too exhausted for this whole thing to happen with my first birth. But so since then, in terms of podcasts, what I listen to the Free Birth podcast, I listen to the Birth Hour podcast. I am in the middle right now of Yoga Girl's Free Birth podcast on her own podcast. It's called From the Heart.
Okay.
We can write some of these resources
I'm
down.
I'm putting them down right now.
Yeah. And then, you know, what I've also been doing is just reading through birth stories through Instagram accounts where people are posting them. So I follow a couple of midwives that I can post as well. Make a note of that for me to remind myself of positive stories. And they have, like, a little video or some pictures or something that go along with it. But just kind of reminding myself, like, oh yeah, like, this is the way that it can go. Or Rose Uncharted is a woman that I follow on Instagram, and she just had her fourth birth, and it was a free birth, and it was one of her hardest births. And so I learned a lot from that too, because I hadn't really considered, what if this birth is actually my hardest? So that was an important teaching lesson for me. So you see what I'm saying? Like, although Rose doesn't think of her birth as being like traumatic, it was beautiful and great, but it was her most painful. And I found it to be really good information to know that about her and that option, because you'd kind of think, oh, well, your fourth, like, all right, it's just going to fall right out of you. <It's> like, no, that's not how it happens. And, you know, baby could be in a funky position or whatever. So anyway, I'm kind of starting that process of thinking about birth, remembering, okay, like, I can do hard things, and going there in my mind. What if the baby is surprise breech? What if this is super hard? Like, how am I going to cope again? What if it's long and long? And, you know, I've had my most two recent births have been totally great in their time lengths. And what if it's long, like my first birth again? And how am I going to kind of remember what to do and remember that I need to have the snacks and et cetera, et cetera. So that's that kind of thing. And then now my third thing that I'm doing is preparing for postpartum and starting that conversation with my friends and family, namely, like, my husband and my parents and my mother-in-law, who are going to be here, and really, really starting to kind of layer that I want no expectations out of me for 2 full weeks.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. I did that with my second postpartum, and it was the best I have felt. Did not do that with my third postpartum. I got really cocky and I thought, I feel great. And I got up and I started doing things way too early, and it came to totally bite me in the ass. Mm-hmm. That was, like, yet another humbling experience for me. And so I really learned, no, I know my body. I know my body by now. Holy crap. It's been 4 months. I know what I need. And yeah, maybe it's going to seem like I'm just back here chilling. And guess what? I'm not. I'm healing. I'm creating milk for our new child. I'm doing everything for the new child. I have no expectations for anybody to help me at all with the new baby. I actually don't even want any help with the new baby. There's, like, nothing you can do anyway. Yeah. She doesn't want to be with you anyway.
Right.
She wants to be with me, and I want to be with her. I don't want to be separated from her. I don't want anybody to be like, oh, well, let me take the baby so you can go do something. No, no, thank you. That's not what I want. What I want is to be fed a lot of food, to sit in bed and rest and have no expectations for me to do anything for the other children or anything around the house. And it's really difficult because I am just inherently the type of person that's constantly picking up and cleaning like all day long. It's just like, I see something and I go put it back and da-da-da-da-da-da-da. Like, I mean, it's really difficult for me to like walk by a mess and not clean it up. And so my plan is to have the support systems such that there's lots of food in the house that I've prepped. I don't think I need to be doing that just quite yet, but I'm just on my mind. I'm kind of gathering some recipes and then, you know, hopefully a bit of a meal train as well from all of the people around us, friends and family. And then just really speaking though with my husband and again, those people close to me that this is my expectation. This is what I'm envisioning. And then also, do we need to hire some more help or like, how can we make this work? What's his paternity leave like? What, you know, where are the worries here? Because my body also very much easily manifests mastitis as a sign of rundown.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And so I know that. I got it 6 weeks postpartum with Sloan for no other reason that I was just acting like I didn't have a baby. And 6 weeks is a long time. I'm not going to be able to sit in bed for 6 weeks, although that is the, you know, traditional culture norm.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But for 2 full weeks, I want to be really, really healing, almost to the point where I'm going to go crazy, being stir crazy.
Yeah.
And I just know that that's going to be the best for my body. So the way, and I can talk about this in the future too, but we have a postpartum healing episode to check out of what does that mean? What is that? How do you do that? How do you call in the resources? Or if you don't have the money for the resources, maybe how do you do them yourself? You know, getting some herbs are very cheap and you can do sitz baths, you can do yoni steams, you can get a very simple ace bandage type wrap and do your own belly wrapping. It doesn't have to be expensive. It just takes some education and some motivation and then setting levels of expectation. Mm-hmm. Education, motivation, expectation. So that everybody's on the same page and nobody's like, what are you doing? You need to get up and go feed these people or whatever it is. I know that, again, like just to call it out, I know that this is a huge luxury to be able to even finagle this. And I just wish it wasn't. I wish this was no schmo, plain, absolutely bare minimum, as if we had had a major spinal surgery. No one would expect you to be getting up and coming to the table for dinner at 3 days postpartum or whatever. And I'm expecting this kid to be tongue-tied like all of mine have been and to need the release. I think our genetics just suck with that, with our oral function. And it's just, I mean, I'll be shocked. I will be absolutely gobsmacked shocked if she doesn't need it. So that is a big deal though, because it's getting up and getting out of the house and moving around. And that's the only time that I want to be doing that is for that release so that I can breastfeed her, because I know myself and I know my nipples and I know my boobs. And if I don't get her released, I won't be able to nurse her. So, my prep is all sort of like at the phase right now is in just discussions and kind of figuring out some logistics and laying that groundwork so that then as I get closer, we can start to be like, okay, who's coming what weeks? Is it my parents? Is it her? Is it my husband's mom? Who's going to be here or wants to be here? How do they want to do it? Which nanny of the two that we have who are both young and in school, are either of them even available? Are either of them even interested? Do we need to hire somebody different? Blah, 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 blah.
Right.
So like that's kind of where I'm at is in all this sort of prep stuff. And then you know, all of the other little details, I'll order some of the things, you know, I have to get all the homework supplies and all that kind of thing. I have not been one to make, to be a big like sitz bath or yoni steaming type person. I did do the sitz baths after my first because I tore pretty badly, but then I haven't torn with the last two. If I tear, I'll do that. But I don't think I'm going to buy anything ahead of time. Mm-hmm. There's a lot of things that I just know now, like, I don't really need to do that yet. I can kind of wait. Mm-hmm. And then I know also like where my priorities are with money. My priorities would be lactation and craniosacral help. And then maybe like a session of craniosacral or massage for me within that first week of postpartum as well. Just really helping with aiding my relaxation and my oxytocin to make milk for the baby. But everything for me in the early postpartum revolves around my nipples, healing, latch, pain, revision, all of those kinds of things. Unfortunately, that's just – but I know now, you know. So I use that information and it empowers the way that I plan things, you know. So anyways, that's kind of like where I'm at right now. I hadn't really thought about any of these things until the last like 2 weeks, I'd say I've just been really present to being in the early kind of phases of pregnancy. And now I'm like, oh, this is, I only have 16 weeks left. Like, that's going to fly by. And so I just am starting to creep in some thoughts, you know,
yep.
And getting very excited about it too.
Oh, so good. I feel like you are such a wealth of knowledge, and I'm so happy that you have learned all the things that you have, because I don't have to go learn them and I'm just going to ask you them.
Yes. And it's my favorite thing to tell you.
And anybody else who's looking for support, you know, I don't know if you're seeing anybody or doing anything around supporting people, but just all of your resources are so awesome, and to follow you on Instagram and just learn from you for anyone
who's
going through that.
I'm doing consults. Yeah, I am doing consults, and I think that people find it a little bit confusing. So I just want to clarify here while you mentioned it, is that they're like a health consult style, meaning that I am not acting as your primary care doctor, or if it's about your child, I'm not acting as a pediatrician, which is something that I do here locally in Boise once a week. Although actually now I have pulled back to once a month, and I'm not taking any new patients because I'm going on maternity leave, and it just doesn't seem fair to take on new patients for just a couple months and then dip out while you need new care. So if you'd like a referral for a local ND, I can give that to you. Just, you know, message me somehow. You can either email me or on Instagram. I'm very active in my Instagram DMs, so don't feel.
Great. And I'm sorry that I'm not, for anyone listening. I need to be better about that.
Well, you are getting there though. It's just you're busy, you know?
I know.
But the consults are one-on-one, and it would be something like, say you, I spoke about this recently. Like if you just find out that you're pregnant and you have no idea what to do, and you know, your practitioner won't see you till you're almost at the end of the first trimester, I can create the entire plan for you of, you know, what would be an ideal diet, things, goals for the diet, the supplements, the symptom management as well. So maybe you don't feel sick yet, but if you do, then here's the things that we can do about it, et cetera, or a preconception plan. So I make a lot of preconception plans. I make a lot of early pregnancy plans. And then I speak to a lot of pregnant women who are planning some kind of a birth or postpartum prep, and they just have some questions about logistics. I've also helped several women with lactation things who are in that early postpartum, or maybe they themselves have some kind of a nutrient thing that's going off, like their thyroid or their anemic. Mm-hmm. And then I have also helped several families with pediatric cases. So, you know, maybe it's that their child is constipated, or it's eczema, or it's something like that. Sleep. One of the babies like never sleeps. So, you know, different things like that. So there's a lot that we can talk about. The reason that I delineate that it's not that I'm not acting as your primary care is because I'm not going to be able to order you medications or labs. I can suggest them, mm-hmm. and you can get them done, and I can make suggestions thereof. But it's just a little bit of a different, you need to understand that I'm not doing telehealth for you. It's more consultation based. It's recommendations in general for these general things, but it can be very, very helpful. And I love it. I'm sad to not have to, you know, not be able to do them in that early postpartum again. But again, that's one thing I'm prepping for, is to not have any clients around the time of my birth and postpartum, yeah. so that I can just be very in my body and out of my head.
Yeah. Oh, I love it. Okay. Well, this was awesome. I hope everyone learned a lot from listening to this podcast, and we'll see you next time.
All right. Bye.
Thanks for listening to this episode of the Healthy as a Mother podcast. In order for other women to hear this information, please leave a review with Apple Podcasts, subscribe, and send to a friend who could benefit from this content. We're so excited to share more on becoming and being a mother next time. And remember, a healthier future starts now, and it starts with you.
Please remember that the ideas and views presented in this podcast are for informational purposes only and are not intended to serve as a substitute for medical care of any kind, including the diagnosis or treatment of any illness or disease. Consult with your provider before integrating this information into your own care plan. Now go have a wonderful day. You've got this.